What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Compressed FM, a podcast all about web development and design. In this episode, we're going to talk about small design things that actually make a difference.
Hello, my name is Amy Dutton, and I'm the Director of Design at Zeal.
What's up, everybody? My name is James Cuquick, and I teach developers through content.
Web development and design, who would have guessed? Well, we can do them both, even add a little zest. So turn up the volume, get ready for the best. Let's get it started in this episode of Compressed.
Today, we're joined by three fabulous sponsors. Vercel will meet all of your hosting needs. Zeal is a software consultancy, and they are hiring. And Dado CMS is a performant headless CMS. More from each of these later in the show. James, what have you been up to?
I started counting calories like 2 weeks ago.
Oh boy.
Fun times, right? It's actually something we had done early in COVID and actually noticed a difference. And I think the biggest thing, I've mentioned this to you before, I probably easily, without giving myself a limit, easily eat like 3,000 calories a day on a consistent basis. And so I'm just trying to pay more attention to that. So I've been logging everything that I eat. I also went to a bachelor party in Austin, so that was hard. So I had a few days off. And then we just had our virtual summit for Auth0, which means that we could expense meals during that time. So that made it tough too. But yeah, I've been trying to pay a lot of attention to that. And I've been running and doing the Peloton more consistently. So I'm starting to see some progress there, which is cool. And then we actually just wrapped up all the Next.js conf stuff. Also give people an idea of when we're recording. So we had the community shout out that we did with Compressed FM and had a bunch of cool people in that. I was like a 4 minute clip. And then we had our talk, a deep dive into the dashboard that we built for Compressed FM, which is really cool. And then I had an additional talk on Auth0 about protecting applications with Next.js. Anyway, that was a lot of fun. And then lastly, my wife just got a new desk. A sponsor reached out to me, asked if I needed a new desk, which I didn't, but she wanted an electric desk instead of a manual crank desk. And so they sent us one, we set it up in her office, and then I got inspired to move my desk around. So everything in here is different. And actually, the last thing, I say last thing, I've got lots of things. I got the YouTube plaque for 100K. So it came within a couple of days. I was really surprised. But yeah, so I've got that in the background here of my video, which is pretty neat.
That is awesome. Hashtag goals.
Yeah, what have you been up to?
So last week, I went to San Francisco to meet with a client. So that was super fun. What's kind of ironic was the last trip that I made really for work specifically before COVID was to San Francisco at a conference. And so it was strange being back in the same city, hopefully post-COVID, whatever that means. But I had a great time just hanging out with people. And I love remote work. I love the flexibility that gives us. But there's still something to be said about talking to people and meeting people in person that just Zoom does not replace that. So it really was great to see everybody.
Yeah, I went to my first conference. We talked about this a couple episodes ago. And then I've done like one or two work trips outside of that. And it's just, there's nothing like it. It's so great that we have the ability to work remotely and it works really well. But it's just never quite the same as being in person there with people.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, let's get into it. We have had a couple of episodes in the past on design. So episode 5, we talked about starting a brand new design project. In episode 10 and 11, we had design fundamentals. So you can go back and check those out. But this episode, we want to focus specifically on the application part of that. Whereas the fundamentals talks about the concepts behind design and some of the general principles, how do those actually get applied to your design itself? And just small tweaks make your entire design look a lot better. So the first one that I wanted to address, and this one to me is just huge, is alignment. So just making sure that all of your elements line up on a similar vertical axis. So you can do that easily by applying a grid to your design. And a lot of times I'll work off of a 12-column grid because it's easily divisible by 2, 3, or 4. And that just helps keep everything in line. It just feels a whole lot tighter when all that stuff is consistent. But then when the project moves into development, because you're consistent in the design, it's going to take a lot less code and developers are going to love you more for it. So it's a big plus.
And from a developer's perspective with that, I think we've talked about this in the past, but Bootstrap really kind of made the 12-column grid universal for people. But now with CSS Grid, that sort of stuff is just baked in. So you don't need to jump for something like Bootstrap or a framework. You can just use CSS Grid and set that stuff up yourself, which is really a big game changer, I think, in the development of the design from a CSS perspective, if that's the way to put it.
Yeah, for sure. You're not having to do floats left and right and clear floats like we did back in the good old days.
Back in the old days.
What's crazy with a CSS grid is really you just need two lines of code, display grid and then defining your columns. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that you would want to use a grid. The other piece is just making sure that your text is left aligned. You can center things, but just do it in moderation. And the main reason for that is readability. At least in English, we read from left to right. So you want things to be left aligned. That way your eye is constantly coming back to the same point.
Yeah. And this is, I would say this is one of the most common things that I have myself done incorrectly and see other people do as well. I think it's just really easy to want everything to be centered without realizing the implications of not necessarily what it looks like, but also the readability of it. So I think the general consensus, if you have more than two lines, if you give yourself a rule, maybe it's three, but never more than two or three should you use center text. Go ahead and left align those. It's going to be much more readable that way.
That's right. I had a professor in college that said it's called the dead center for a reason. It's dead there. Avoid it.
Nice.
Yeah. Let me take a brief moment and talk about one of our sponsors. Vercel will meet all of your hosting needs, and we're actually hosting the compressed.fm site and my personal site, selfteach.me, on Vercel. They also power more well-known sites like Twilio, but you can use them for e-commerce, travel, news, and marketing sites. You name it, they can host it. When I got ready to launch the compressed site, it was super easy. I pointed it to the GitHub repository and told it what folder my next.js project was in, and then it just worked. Ridiculous, right? But they also power over 30 plus Jamstack frameworks, including Create React App, Next, Nuxt, Vue, Ember, Svelte, Angular, Hugo, and Gatsby, just to name a few. But one of my favorite features is when you set up your account, you get your own dashboard, and here you can invite other team members to collaborate or view analytics. So as soon as I push the code to my GitHub repository, it deploys that code and I can watch the build and its entire process through their custom dashboard. So be sure to check out Vercel. I'll include a link in the show notes, but special thanks to Vercel for being a compressed.fm sponsor. Okay, so the next one I have is proximity. And I think this one is huge. So the idea is that the items that are closer together, your eye is going to try and group those things together. So you want to make sure that things that should be grouped together are closer together. And that also creates a vertical rhythm. Say you have a card with a bunch of content related to a specific article, all that stuff's going to be close together. Then you want to make sure you have enough space in between the next card so that your eye will see those as two separate elements.
Yeah. You mentioned vertical rhythm. Same, I think, goes for horizontal rhythm as well, right? If you have cards that are side by side, or if you have a 12 column grid and you have things lined up horizontally, having space in between those items gives you that rhythm too. And then even within a given card, a lot of times you'll have an image and a header and then a subtext, like a line or two of subtext, and then maybe a bigger gap and then a button at the bottom for a CTA of read more or something. So you're pulling that button away so that it more stands out as the call to action. So that separating that out from just the text, make sure that you see that call to action as its own thing and kind of give the user a little bit of inclination. Hey, this is the thing that you actually want to click on and go take this action.
Yeah. And while we're talking about cards, this is purely preference, but I usually won't do a two column card view. I'll have three columns of cards in a row versus two, because when it comes to this principle of proximity, my eye wants to group those two items that are right next to each other. Whereas if I have three, I don't feel as inclined to try and group that into a single component.
Interesting.
But that's just personal preference.
Yeah. So if you were doing like responsive design, you would jump from three down to like the one, everything stacked on top of each other.
That's right. If I can help it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
The other side of that too, though, if you had three and you try and come down to responsive, if you do two, then you'd have one at the bottom and an empty space. Mm-hmm. So it also makes sense that you would do it collapse down to a stacked view.
And a lot of times when mine does that, the last one, maybe it's when I use Flexbox, the last one is centered horizontally. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't line up in the two columns. Yep. I think that's using like Flexbox and the wrap commands that are there instead of CSS
that's right.
grid.
That's right. So you had mentioned the call to action, and that kind of flows into the next point, which is hierarchy. The main thing is you want to guide the user through your page and help point out the things that you want them to do or to pay attention to. So you want your call to action to be the most prominent item on the screen. You want to think about what's the job that the user is trying to accomplish by coming to that page. And you want to make sure that's obvious. So if it's a sales page, you want to make that buy button super obvious because you want them to purchase that product. You don't want them to get distracted by other things that might be on the page, like more information or about me or other services that I offer. You want to make sure that they know you want them to buy your product. And that's where they should click.
A couple of examples of things that I've seen that do the opposite of that. Like they're not necessarily the main focus, but when they're not super visible to me are very confusing. One, login buttons. Like a lot of times I'll see like a big register button, but not a login button. And in my head, I'm like, the percentage of people that visit this website, the vast majority of them that are coming back are actually already registered and they're going to log in. So I've never quite understood why register would be so emphasized and login would be so de-emphasized. So I've struggled to find that at times. And then also search buttons. If you have any piece of content that's searchable and that search button or box is not very clear, I've stumbled around a lot. And I think it takes away from the experience because I just, that seems like an easy thing and it should be very easy for me to find and take those specific actions.
Yeah. And one of the ways that you can emphasize the action that you want the user to take is through that hierarchy. You can do that with size or with color or placement on the screen.
So here's the next section and I'll let you talk about it, but I'll just lead into this to say, this is probably a non-designer's favorite thing to overdo is drop shadows.
Oh, that's so funny. So if you add a drop shadow, you do want to add it subtly. And usually the defaults within Photoshop and even Figma are way too much. So you want to make sure that you dial those down. And if you're trying to add a little bit more, maybe add multiple drop shadows or a very subtle border around all of your elements to make them appear sharper and to give it a little bit more separation from the background.
So what does, I don't actually know how this is used or like what benefit you get out of it, but can you explain a little bit more like the use of multiple drop shadows? Like how do those help differentiate between just one and how do they play off of each other?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that I do is I might put a drop shadow that's almost more like a glow around the entire box to separate it from the background, but it's going to be super subtle. And then I might have another drop shadow that just adds a little bit more shadow to the bottom. So the bottom feels a little bit heavier. And if it's done correctly, you get that separation, but you also feel like the light source is coming from a single source of light. So that was kind of my next point is if you have different elements on the page with a drop shadow, you always want to make sure that the angle is the same so that it feels like you have a single source of light shining down on your user interface.
Yeah, that's really interesting because every time I've used drop shadows, I mean, I use the default stuff that I think most of us probably, or a lot of us probably do. And it's like usually offset to the bottom right.
Yep.
But I've always had that issue of then the top left doesn't look like it's off the page. So that's a perfect solution of give yourself a little bit. And you mentioned the glow effect. That just means it's all the way around and the exact same all the way around. And then you add that extra one on top of that in the bottom right to help emphasize that angle. That's really cool.
That's right. And even if you don't want to use multiple drop shadows, like I mentioned, you can add a very faint border and it'll accomplish the same purpose. Okay. And I have a huge section for typography. I feel like typography can be hard if you don't understand a lot of the concepts. I had a professor in college that said you can tell a good designer from a great designer based on their typography. So I've always tried to pay special attention to typography because I want to be included in that great designer category.
Amy still having this battle of trying to get into that category of great designer, which I would throw you in, but I don't know if my opinion matters very much.
Thank you. Well, it's funny because when I've interviewed designers, that's the first thing that I look for is how do they treat their typography and what are their typography choices, because it shows a next level attention to detail that might not be the same across the board if you're just going through tons and tons of portfolios. So part of this is you obviously want the font to be readable. Not all fonts are readable. And also fonts convey a feeling or an emotion. So serif fonts, these are like, think Times New Roman. They have what's called feet on the edge, where it kind of flares out. That is going to build trust and it's going to feel a little bit more formal. Where a sans serif font, so sans in Latin means no, so no serif, no feet, those fonts are going to appear a little bit more modern.
And those are usually when I'm just kind of building something myself, I go with a sans serif font and I'm not doing like a whole typography plan, but I usually choose those as feeling more modern. And I wanted to add one example of the feeling or emotion that comes from fonts is we have this series coming on the Osseo channel called Dev Bytes. And we had a designer go through and design some thumbnail templates and like a brand guide around that idea. And it was really cool. He showed me this Figma board and did this whole detailed explanation of like, well, I started thinking about developers and I started thinking about bytes and zeros and ones. And he got into 8-bit art. And so we kind of did like this 8-bit logo and then chose a font to go with it that actually I think he kind of built the font out of 8-bit stuff, which is really cool. So just looking at that immediately, you feel like you're in this zeros and ones world and you feel like it's techie because that's what you associate the zeros and ones with. I really appreciated him talking through his process and him being able to articulate what I would naturally feel based on looking at it, but maybe I didn't even register all the thoughts that were going through my mind when I would look at it.
So if you're unsure about which font to pick, I would say pick one font and then just use a lot of different weights with it. A good font is going to give you a lot of different options within that family so that it might feel like you're using multiple fonts. So you might have something that's really thin and then a black font, which feels super heavy, but you get all these variations within a single font that will give you lots of options. If you want more fonts, I would just say max out at two. And a lot of times if I'm dealing with multiple fonts, I might pick a serif font and a sans serif font. So you have contrast between the two.
And if we're thinking about a blog for a developer, would you throw in a third for your code snippets? Would you throw in like a monospace font is usually what that is? Is that a reasonable thing to do?
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. Yeah. And actually, if you look, we've talked about this before. If you looked at the self-teach me site, I have like five fonts. So some people would say that's probably not good typography choices, but I did have intention in picking each of those fonts.
That's hilarious that you outed yourself of only use two fonts, but
I'm going to use five.
That's right.
What's funny is my main concern is site load time with the five fonts. It's not even how it looks visually that bothers me. It's the load time.
So do you notice a difference in your load time based on having the amount of fonts that you have?
I don't notice it, but I know if I pull it up in, say, Lighthouse, or sometimes when you are selecting fonts within Google, it'll tell you, oh goodness, you've packaged all these fonts together. This is a lot. And it'll tell you to pare down a little bit.
It's funny having to take your own advice sometimes.
I know, right? But we talked about this before. Sometimes it's a matter of knowing the rules so you can intentionally break them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
One of the things that was interesting to me when I was pulling all these points together for the podcast was the IL-1 test. And I'd actually never heard of this before, but a typographer that I really admire and respect, Jessica Hitch, this was her test that she talks about. So the idea is when you're trying to pick a font, you type out uppercase I, lowercase L, and the number one. And if you think about it, those three letters, those three characters can look the same depending on the font, because it could just be a straight line. But you can start to see the differentiations between fonts based on those three characters, and that will contribute to the readability of the font.
Interesting. That's a great tip. I've never heard of or thought of that at all. That's really neat.
Like I said, it was new to me, but it made complete sense when I was reading about it.
And now it's time to take a second to talk about one of our sponsors, which is Dado CMS. Dado CMS is a complete and performant headless CMS built to offer the best developer experience and user friendliness in the market. One of the things I think is really interesting and neat on their website is if you hover on their Why Dado CMS tab in the nav bar, you see sections for developers, digital marketers, and content creators. So it's got the entire audience covered. They also provide a rich CDN-powered GraphQL API with real-time updates, which is really neat. So all of you who love working with GraphQL and are looking for something that has real-time updates, this is really, really cool. They also provide a super flexible way to handle dynamic layouts and structured content, and then have best in-class image and video support with progressive image loading out of the box. So if you're looking for a headless CMS that can help represent every member of your team, make sure to check out Dado CMS.
So something else to consider is line height, and this is the space between each of the lines. And a lot of times you want this to be based on the X height. So when you think about the lowercase x, that's called the X height. It's how tall your lowercase x is. And so you can have two different typefaces, maybe that are both 20 pixels tall, but the X height is going to be different. And so that means that the line height will also need to be different. That's how you can figure out how to set the line height and what that needs to be. So one thing that you might want to think about when you're writing long form copy is to use 20 pixels. So that might seem really big, but if somebody's reading something, that's going to help them read it quickly. And then you also want to limit your line length to 45 to 75 characters. And really, people have found that 66 characters seems to be the sweet spot. So if you want a good example of this, I would just go to medium.com, because they have spent thousands and thousands of dollars on user research to figure out what is the optimal font, the optimal size, and the optimal line length. And it's just a great case study in typography for the web.
And what, so if you think about the line height being 20 pixels for longer form body content, what would be your typical font size for that body content? Usually like 12, 14 is probably what I see the most. Does that sound right?
Sorry, for font size?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what I was saying here is if you use 20 instead of 12 or 14, then that'll help with readability.
Oh, that's not line height. That is the font size.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That is the font size. is 20 pixels. Yeah. So
would you say, like, if I looked at your site, like your body concept? Or, okay. So again,
yes. So this is no. This is good. So I actually have, I think, a PR on my own project to change this, because I think I'm either using 16 or 18, but to reduce the line length to make sure that it's not quite as wide as it is.
Okay.
Because the longer the line length, the harder it is going to be for your eye to come back all the way to the left.
Okay. And I just looked on mine. So mine is 16.
So you could bump that up to 20.
Yeah. Interesting. How does that change with responsive design? Does that change when you go down to a mobile device, or does that stay relatively the same?
Yeah. I think some of it would also depend on the font itself, and you can just test it out on your phone to see what feels the most natural. But I know I've been to several sites where it's like, you're on mobile, so I'm going to make this 12 points. Like, I'm having trouble reading it at 12 points. And some of this is just to prevent the user from getting that fatigue if they're reading a long form piece of copy.
Cool.
But part of that, so if you have a smaller font size, say you're writing, I don't know, a disclaimer or something like that, the smaller the font size, the more line height you need. So you just need your eye to have more space to come back to the next line. That's really what line height does, is it gives your eye room to move from left to right, back and forth.
And I think we all have probably been here, like reading a book where the line height is relatively small, and you go from one line and go back to the beginning of the line, and you like stay on the same line, especially when you're tired. You might do that several times in a row. So having that extra space makes it a little clearer, easier on your eye to go make sure you make it down to the next line.
That's so true. And actually, here's a tip. So if you're trying to figure out what your type scale needs to be, the best way that I've found to determine this is to use the Fibonacci sequence. So for example, the Fibonacci sequence says that you take the first number and the second number, and you add those together to get the third number. And then you add the last two and get the next number. Let me give you an example, and hopefully this will make a little bit more sense. If I say I want my fine print to be 14 pixels, and maybe I want my body copy to be 20 pixels, then I'm going to add 14 and 20 together, and I get 34. So that would be the next step up in the font size that I use. Then I would add 34 to 20, and that's 54. So that would be the next step up. And so then you can just use that system to go up however high you need. But that's going to make your font choices feel really tight and together, because you've given them this contrast based on the Fibonacci sequence.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that. I've always wanted kind of a golden rule of what to do size-wise for your headers and stuff. That seems like a pretty easy one to follow. Now, the question is, though, could you live code an algorithm to solve the Fibonacci sequence in an interview?
Oh, could I?
To find the nth number. And I think there is definitely, I've been doing a lot of TikToks on interviews, which is on coding interviews, which is why I bring this up. I think there's some sort of optimal way to do it. I can't remember, but there's like,
can't you use like a function that calls itself to keep passing in the result of the number to add the next two items together?
Yep. You can do recursion.
Didn't a reduce does that? Or it'll take the results?
Yeah. Same thing.
JavaScript or reduce?
Yeah. Yep. You would just have to have a reduce. It like iterates through an array versus this.
I see.
You don't necessarily need an array. You just need to know how many times, or the recursion is about like having that base case of knowing when to stop. But same general idea of calling back the same function, updating the thing that you're passing along to it.
So actually, one of the things that I like about Tailwind is it has that vertical rhythm built in. It has that type scale for you. Now, theirs is based on a quarter rim. A lot of times when I'm using Tailwind, I feel like my design is a little bit tighter because it has that system built in.
Lots of reasons to love Tailwind.
Unpopular or popular opinion, depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah, let us know on Twitter, Compressed FM, and you can tag Self Teach Me for Amy and James C. Quick for myself of what you think of Tailwind, and maybe if you're not a Tailwind fan, what your favorite way of doing CSS is.
Yeah, for sure. We should do an episode on all the different CSS options that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be a great one. Mm-hmm. Let us know on Twitter if you'd like to see that episode.
Oh, funny. Okay, so we're talking about text. Let's also talk a little bit about copy style. And you want to make sure that you are putting copy in short paragraphs so that your scanners, people that just skim your page, can easily find what they're looking for. You want to make sure that your messages are short and sweet. And this is another tip that I'd never heard before, but it makes complete sense. When you're writing out your messages, you want to make sure that the goal is first, not the action. So let me give you an example. If you want to add a song to a playlist, that's probably what you're going to be looking for. You have add a song to your playlist by dragging it to the folder. You're putting the goal first. Your goal is to add it to the playlist. On the other hand, if you said drag the song into the Awesome Tunes folder to add it to your playlist, you have to think about that a little bit more because it's saying this is what you have to do. And then it has the goal in the second part of the sentence. Not a copywriter.
Interesting.
But yeah. I found that really helpful.
Yeah, that makes sense. To give before you have the action, make sure you have the context of why you're taking that action. What are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah. Interesting. When it just tells you how people think when they come to your site, they have a goal in mind that they're trying to accomplish. And so they're going to be skimming for the goal, not the action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. To emphasize the skimming of sites, like pay attention, people that are listening, as you go to a site and read articles or just a person's website, how little you actually read or how much you skim. I mean, it's seconds that people will skim your site. So making everything, emphasizing the things that you really want people to see and making it as readable as possible is definitely really, really important.
Yeah, one thing that people might find helpful is there's a app or piece of software that you can put on your site called Hotjar. And that will tell you how far people are scrolling down on your page and also where things are clicking. So once it is able to run a few times on your page, they create what's called a heat map. And so the spots where people are clicking a lot will be red, or it will also show you in terms of scrolling how far they're getting down on the page, which is really helpful if you have a very long page and you want to know, are people even getting down to the bottom? Okay, so a lot of design is all about consistency. And I found that that makes a huge difference in your design as well. It's a small thing, but it makes a huge difference. So for example, if you're going to use icons, you want to make sure that they all have the same style. You don't want to mix, say, an outlined font with something that has solid fills. So I think material design, for example, has both of these as options, but you want to make sure that you stick within the same style across the board for your entire site. Okay, the next thing I want to point out is spacing. And white space is a good thing. And I like calling it white space versus negative space because it's not a negative thing. But that's also going to contribute to your vertical rhythm that we talked about. And I found it to be really helpful if you stick to a 4-point or an 8-point scale. So you're trying to separate your items in pixels based on those measurements. And part of the reason why that's so helpful is because if you're dealing with rims, one rim equals 16 pixels. And one more thing about spacing is you can actually use the same Fibonacci sequence when you're talking about spacing. So if you want a lot of space, you can determine what those gaps are based on the Fibonacci sequence.
These are the types of things that I love. For me, not feeling comfortable making that sort of stuff up myself, I love having quick and fast rules that I can follow that will work. I mean, 90% of the time, those are going to get you what you need, right? And then people like yourself that have more experience can kind of customize that last 10% to really tweak what you need. But I love having those quick rules to get you 90% of the way there.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons that I really like design versus art is, yes, there's some emotion and some subjectivity into it, but there's also rules. So if you're not exactly sure what to do, as long as you abide by those rules, your designs are going to be even stronger. So one of those things that's very subjective that has a lot of rules around it is color theory. If you're not sure what colors to pick, I'll tell you what I do. Even as a designer, I'll go to, I call it Coolors. It's really colors.io, but it's spelled C-O-O-L-O-R-S. And what you can do is you can just hit the space bar and it'll cycle through a bunch of different color options. So if I'm dealing with a brand that has maybe a particular shade of blue already defined, I can plug that in and then just hit the space bar until I find a palette that fits really well with their color of blue. And I've found that that's very helpful for me when I'm not sure what colors to pick or what shades would be an exact match with their brand color. Okay, so one of the things you can also do when you're trying to figure out your colors is you can add tint, shade, or tone. So a tint is your one color mixed with white. Shade is your one color mixed with black. And then tone is that same shade mixed with gray. And so by doing that, you get a monochromatic palette that feels like it all fits together. So it's a lot easier, I think, sometimes to determine what those tints, shades, and tones are. I know Figma, for example, has a plugin that you can use. I think it's called Color Compass. I'll include a link within the newsletter in the show notes. But I've used that a lot of times when I'm trying to pick out a similar tint, shade, or tone for the color that I'm working with.
It's kind of funny that you mentioned this in these notes. I was listening to Syntax podcast the other day, which people should check out if they haven't already. But I think Scott asked Wes if he knew the difference. And I think they mostly got it, but kind of figured that out together. I think they both had to go and kind of firm up exactly what that was. But I think that was one of the few times I've ever heard that, like, what tint, shade, and tone are. I had no idea, actually. So within like a week span, now it's come up for the second time.
Twice. Yeah, when I was in school, we had to do these color theory practice cards where you'd start with red and you just do a stroke of paint and just add a little bit of white to each stroke. And then you do the same thing with grays and blacks just to experiment with color theory and that kind of thing. But you don't really get that in the digital world other than something like that Color Compass plugin that I mentioned where you can see all that visually. Let me take a brief moment and talk about the company that I work for, Zeal. They actually sponsor our podcast. They design custom applications and develop primarily in Rails and React. They're a remote-first company. Even before the pandemic, they're based out of Southern Oregon, but I live outside of Nashville, and we have team members across the entire country. But Zeal holds a special place in my heart because, as I mentioned, I work there. But I can honestly say it's the best place that I've ever worked. And good news for you, they are hiring, so you could work with me. At Zeal, one of our core principles is bridge the gap. So we've noticed there's a gap in the industry between juniors and seniors. So we want to help juniors level up and achieve that next level within their career path. So with that in mind, I'm going to highlight a particular job that we're hiring for right now, and I'm super stoked about this. It's called the Software Residency, and this position is specifically for that junior designer or developer that wants to be mentored and level up and eventually become a senior. So this position is all about becoming that unicorn, for lack of a better word, but it's that person that can do UI, UX, and development. So similar to a medical residency, you'll be partnered actually with me and we'll work together on projects. We'll also be partnering with Learn, which is a coding bootcamp, and they'll provide career growth and professional development through one-on-one coaching. So I think the whole setup is pretty unique. You can find more information on the website, softwareresidency.com. And of course, I'll include a link within the show notes. Special thanks to Zeal for being a Compressed.fm sponsor. If you're designing for mobile, and this is kind of interesting, when I was doing work for a client this week, they said that I believe 90% of their users for a particular application was coming from mobile, which that is the highest percentage that I've ever heard for mobile. I knew it was around the 70% mark, but to know that it's gone, for them at least, even higher to the 90% mark. So when you're designing, you want to make sure that you're taking those things into consideration. So a thumb, when you're trying to count for that target area, needs to be at least 48 by 48 pixels. That's right, thumbs up. And then you just also remember to put things at the bottom of the screen because that's easier to reach down there. One of the things that I found was interesting in the latest iOS update, that Safari URL bar is at the bottom of the screen. It's not at the top.
Is that with iOS 15?
I think so. I also have beta.
Okay, I haven't done that then yet. Yeah.
My phone was acting weird. This was like a couple of versions ago. And so I just went ahead and upgraded to beta and I just stayed on beta. So it's great getting all the latest releases early.
Nice.
Another piece that I would just encourage people to do is to lean into your stereotypes with existing patterns. So for example, you don't want to create these crazy names for your navigation. You don't want to add icons that are a little bit different from what you see elsewhere because those stereotypes exist for a reason and you want to help people out by leaning into those cues. I don't want you to feel like you have to be super creative with everything that you design and create. Sometimes it's good to lean on those stereotypes.
Yeah, that's an interesting balance to make sure things are a familiar environment or familiar flow for people that they're used to, but also then having that level of uniqueness and creativity that comes along with the specific thing that you're building. And I imagine that kind of stuff just comes from experience, right? Like the more feedback you get from things you build to see what's really important to make sure it's consistent and just as they expect, and then know, hey, here's a few opportunities where I can get a little creative with the thing that I provide.
Right. Well, and it's funny when you think about a lot of the stereotypes that we have now, they're patterns that we've used for years, but they don't necessarily translate to the digital world. So for example, if I want to delete something on my computer, I'm dragging it to the trash can on my computer, which is kind of funny. Or if you see a save icon, a lot of times it's a 3.5 floppy disk, which we don't even use floppy disks anymore, but that's the icon that we've leaned on for save. The last point I'm going to make is that you want to communicate state to your users. So for example, if you hit an error message, it needs to be clear. And you'd want to make sure that your error messages aren't just based solely on color. So for example, if I didn't fill out a input field or I misformatted an email address, if I just put a red box around that particular input field to say, hey, that's an error, that could be a problem for a lot of your users if they're colorblind. So you want to make sure that you're accompanying, say, that red outline with an icon or, even better, an error message with text explaining why that particular field is causing problems. Another piece of that is when the page is loading, help the user know what's happening. Or if they hit a blank state, encourage them so that they know what the next action needs to be so that they can add content. So it's no longer a blank state or whatever that next action is. You want to make sure that you're helping guide the user through your interface. Help them know what to expect.
Cool. So typically we would jump into one of our favorite sections, which is the grab bag section, where we take questions from friends and strangers alike on the internet. But what we're going to do is a little bit different this time. We're going to have, if you have questions about design, tips and tricks, specific questions that you have, let us know on Twitter, and we will probably mainly Amy just because of her expertise, but we'll follow up with you on Twitter. So the Compressed FM handle is live on Twitter. And then self-teach-me is Amy, and I am James Hugh Quick on Twitter. So send us a message or send us a tweet there and tag us and use the hashtag #GrabBagQuestion, and we'll get a response for you there. And then we'll go ahead and move into our picks and plugs section, where we pick something that we enjoy that we want to share with everyone and then plug something of our own that we want to selfishly promote. Amy, do you have picks and plugs for us?
I do. So I'm going to pick Fig Jam. So I'm sure you guys have heard us talk about Figma before. They actually have a sister product, kind of. It's built into Figma, called Fig Jam. And recently, with all these meetings that I've done, either going on site with a client and some people being remote, or even just having these remote meetings, Fig Jam has been a huge part in helping us collaborate. So if you've ever used Miro, it's kind of similar to that, but you can brainstorm and fill out stickies and move things around all within Fig Jam. And it was just really cool when we were doing some brainstorming for Q4, or the fourth quarter of the year, as we're finishing things out. So we were able to collect different people's ideas and group them together, and just was really impressed with that project in general. And it's great that it's built into Figma. So for my plug this week, I'm going to pick the advent of CSS.com and the advent of JS.com. So James and I are putting together 24 challenges for the month of December, all leading up to December 25th. So if you go to either or both of those landing pages, you will receive a challenge for free every day in the month of December. And then you can also pay for the solutions for those code challenges. So it's a project that I'm really excited about, and it'll be fun to get it off the ground. James, what about you? Do you have any picks and plugs?
Yeah. So I got a new phone a few months ago, and it's got the MagSafe. It's got the magnetic thing on the back of the phone, and it's got wireless charging. I also, based on Amy's recommendations, got the AirPods Pro recently, and those have wireless charging as well. So I ended up getting a 3-in-1 Apple charger that allows me to charge my phone wirelessly, as well as my AirPods wirelessly, as well as my Apple Watch.
Oh, nice.
Not wirelessly, like it has to touch. But anyway, so it's got like a magnetic thing that I can just like clip on the watch and then set the AirPods and the phone down on it all in one place. And I think it's by Mophie, so it's a good brand. Like, I've had other things from them as well. It's a brand that I trust much more than some of the other ones that are just randomly on Amazon. So it's a little expensive. It's like $70. You can find $30 and $40 versions of this. I just went for Mophie because it's a brand that I've used before and trust. So far it's worked really, really well. I love having that. I've struggled with forgetting to charge my Apple Watch. Now I just take it off every night and put it right there, put my phone next to it, and I'm good to go. The other thing is, I am less likely to use my phone after I put it on the charger because I don't have it connected to a cord that I can pull and read in my face. So it actually has helped me get a little bit further away from my phone once I lay down and get ready to go to bed. So anyway, we'll have a link to that. You can check that out on Amazon. And is it weird if I plug the same thing? So I think we're both pretty excited with Advent of CSS and Advent of JS.com. You can sign up for, depending on when this launches, I don't even know what time we are, either all the details will be there, or you'll have the landing page to sign up, and then you'll get your challenges starting on December 1st. So we've been really excited about that. We'd love for a lot of people to participate in this and go through these challenges. So check them out at Advent of CSS and Advent of JS.com. So that's going to do it for this episode. And the next episode, we're going to embrace this hot debate type format. We're going to have a cage death match between Vue, React, and Svelte. And that'll just allow us to share our different opinions and perspectives and maybe get some insights from people on Twitter as well. So that should be a lot of fun. We'll talk about that in the next episode. In the meantime, if you enjoyed the podcast, make sure to leave us a review. Let us know. We would greatly appreciate that. That's all we got.